Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
But you promised. Kristen's words lilt down into the type of disappointment that congeals the air between us. She is holding the freshly opened second bottle of wine at her side, and I feel like such an asshole. I'd promised her I wouldn't work this weekend. Our first weekend away as a couple in 6 years, but one email from my boss, and my spine turns to cotton. I worked so hard to get this job. I dodged that law firm for years and years, and now that I was finally a clerk, I tested the resolve of Kristen's support on a weekly basis.
We haven't even been here 4 hours,
she continued, shoulders drooping.
And you're going to run off and work already? Jesus, I thought you'd at least wait until tomorrow
before I did my job? I finished her sentence, making everything worse the way that only my dumb mouth can.
You promised.
Her lips close into a tightly clenched thin line, and I know she's right. I promised, and now I'm breaking the promise. I changed tactics. It's just some super simple filing stuff, Kristen. I swear, I can knock it out after you go to bed, and then it's done. I know there's not really anything I can say here that would actually let me off the hook. This is just a plank I'm going to have to walk, so I say what I should have said first. I'm sorry. I know this is shitty of me, and I don't even want to do it. But I don't get to say no right now. Not to my boss. Kristen isn't looking at me anymore, but she also isn't saying anything, and I wonder if I should continue, or if I should say more. But she finally responds after what feels like years of silence.
Just do what you have to do.
She sounded tired. The type of tired that says, all the fight has gone out of this one. And it breaks my heart when she turns around and begins to walk back towards the sliding plate glass doors leading into the house. The house we rented for our weekend away. The cycling hum of the cicadas seems to pick up, as if it felt the need to fill the conversational void that just rolled into town, so I don't hear Kristen the first time and have to ask her to turn around and repeat herself.
I said, I'm going to shower and go to bed now. Just get your work done, and we can pick our vacation back up tomorrow morning.
I will. My mouth hangs open, just in case I think of some other magic phrase I can tag on to make everything just a little better. But the best I can manage to say is, thank you. She purses her lips, shrugs, and as the faint last rays of sunlight steal traces through her hair, Kristen turns around and resumes her walk to the house. Her cork sandals slap and scrape against the patio brick, and as she reaches the door, sliding it open on its loud, whooshing tracks, she offers one more instruction.
Just please don't wake me up when you come to bed.
And she is inside. Behind me, a gust of wind tugs at the tail hedge that encircles the property, and beyond that, in the pond that the house listing falsely advertises as a lake, I hear a small splash. Water laps at the shoreline. The cicadas are just getting warmed up, and the whisper of cars 2 miles away on I-80 all forcibly remind me that I am very, very far from home. Dusk finally loosens its grip on the soft amber and pastel sky that you only get to see when out here in the country. I didn't even notice just how dark it had gotten until Kristen flips on the upstairs bedroom light and the backyard gets washed in its still, yellow haze. It is very dark out. There is no moon out tonight. Normally, when I'm doing this kind of work,
I take over an entire table with folders of papers, photos, affidavits, and all other manner of documentation. But tonight, all I have is my laptop, and that's why I won't actually be able to knock this out in a reasonable manner of time. I'll get it done, I know that, but it's going to be a pain in the ass, and it's going to take forever. I say a quick swear for my boss, count my blessings, and get to work. Sometime around 10:30, I hear the shower turn off upstairs, and Kristen's not-so-sober footsteps rap against the hardwood floors until the bedroom door closes, and the house becomes a mausoleum. I keep a single lamp on in the corner, half-lit, and work away on the couch, vacillating between resting my computer on my legs and on the coffee table in front of me. It's too low, and I have to arch my back in a way that is sure to be coaxing a mighty hump in my spine, but it keeps me awake while my body finishes metabolizing the last of the wine in my otherwise empty stomach. My boss is still awake. I get the occasional update or request for a specific form, and it feels even less like a vacation now. More like a severely handicapped day at the office, where instead of free coffee and bagels, I am incentivized with bleeding corneas and a lack of sex. The night ticks on. It's 12 past midnight. No end in sight for the duties at hand, but I'm stumbling into either a second wind or a fugue state, and Kristen is so deeply asleep that the guilt of working on her vacation fades substantially. This doesn't feel so wrong. This doesn't feel any different than staying awake to read while your partner is sawing logs on the bed next to you. When Kristen wakes up, and this is all done, all it will have actually cost me is a night of sleep and the wrecking ball pangs of stress that prompted this whole episode will be little more than a distant memory. A faint creak in the floorboards upstairs. What the fuck was that? I set my laptop on the coffee table and stand up. The lack of blood in my ass becomes annoyingly obvious, and my knees ache as they contort back into place. Not clinking back into place, but not far from it. I sit down too much. I need to start exercising. The fuck was that? I look over at the sliding glass door, ready to see a spiderweb of cracking glass, but when I lift my head, I am met with opaque black planes standing sentry on the far wall of the room, and the lamplight transmutes them from windows to mirrors, where I stare back at myself like an idiot. There is too much light in here, and too little out there. There is no moon. I walk over to the door, cup my hands around my face, and peer out. Faint outlines of patio furniture, and what I know is the hedge, but wouldn't be able to guess at if I had not already seen it in the prior daylight. Ghost themselves against my own stubborn reflection. I stare harder, willing my pupils to dilate and reveal more of the backyard, but the longer I stare, the less I see. The patio's spectral vigils diffuse slowly into the black backdrop of my own reflection, and I turn my attention instead back to the room behind me. The lamp and its harsh blue LED bulbs put cigarettes out of my eyes, and when I squeeze my eyelids shut, I can hear it again. It takes a fraction of a second to whip my head, and I'm surprised I didn't sever my spine with the fervor, because what I just heard, and I'm sure of it now, was something small and hard clacking against the glass of the sliding door. I don't want to take my eyes off the backyard, regardless of the fact that none of it's actually visible to me. But I do, and I find the locking latch on the door. It makes a richer, triggering thump when it snaps into a locking position. But when that same sound fails to echo in the house or shake any china from the kitchen shelves, I know I'm being dramatic. Silence rings from the glass doors, mocking me. And when I sit back down at my laptop, I am a humbled man. It's just the house settling, the cool night air. Professor Mee is probably right, and I pull my laptop back onto my knees. Two new emails from our boss. The date a witness met with a composite artist differs on two accounts, and the make and model of a car they claim to have seen has changed since their original statement. I started searching through my computer for the old statements, and as I do, the lamp in the corner turns to daggers again, and the light stirs a deep and misplaced agitation in me. I set my laptop back on the table, like I want the lamp to see, and I get up and walk across the corner of the room to switch it off. A big, circular backlight knob sits halfway up its stalk, a stark relic against the viciously modern LED bulb that seems to scream instead of glow. Something old, something new, something screaming, something blue. My hand, still hovering the better part of an inch from the worn brown lamp switch, freezes. There is a jagged ringing still hanging in my ears as the glass sings lightly. One liquid movement of my neck, a near gyroscopic separation from the rest of my body, and I was in a stare down with the glass doors. My fingers closed down, looking for a backlight knob that was still too far away. And when they find nothing, my arm spasms and jerks forward. The lamp rocks on its small base, and my hand knocks into it, but I still do not take my eyes off the door. I finally manage to wrap my fingers around the thin, teetering post of the lamp, aided by my reflection, and here, I freeze again. If there is something, no, someone, outside there, right now, they can see me, but I cannot see them. I should switch off the light. I should expose them. I could even chase them. I could what? The options never get the chance to be laid out on the table, because now I am too afraid to turn the big round knob on the lamp, the knob that will cut the current going to one harsh blue LED bulb that now feels safe. Safer than the dark, anyway. If I switch off the light, and my reflection is replaced with a silhouette of... I'm not sure. What would I do? The door is locked. Kristen is asleep. And if there is a knife in the kitchen, I'm positive that I couldn't find it on the first guess. But for now, as long as this light is on, the movement is stuck in suspended animation, and there is no first move to be made. I switch off the light. The ghosts of the patio furniture are full-body apparitions now, stony and cold. And I wait. I wait for movement, for another sound, for anything aside from nothing, but nothing is all that happens, and I take increasingly ginger steps across the matted blue carpet towards the door. I long the silence for a moment, glance back out at the silent backyard, and then back to the room. All I can see is my laptop, and the achingly loud light that flows from the screen and imposes the sofa. I contemplate turning the lamp back on, because I suddenly do not like how dark this all feels, and it must be an extension of that feeling that causes me so much unease turning back to the glass door. I have to turn back around. It is not a feeling of being watched, but a feeling of not being able to watch. The backyard is unchanged when I do, but that is not comfort, cold or otherwise. So I cut my hands across my eyes once more and press them to the glass. My breath fogs the window on the first glance, and I have to wipe it away with my sleeve and return, lungs tightened. This close to the door, I can hear the faint hum of the cicadas pelting against the siding. The patio furniture looks frigid in the starlight. There is no moon, and leaves furrowed in the hedgerow seem to flirt with movement, but it is only the soreness in my eyes stretching and pinching the world around me. I lean away from the window. My muscles are tired in a way that lets me know they will be sore later, and I place my hands on the small of my back to crack it when I hear it again.
The noise easily rises above the sound of my spine adjusting, and before I can think otherwise, I'm back against the window, looking outside. I exhale and steel my lungs before pressing my face to the glass. But as soon as I do, I have to inhale with a sharp and almost wheezing gasp, because something was moving in the hedges. Something was in the hedge, or moving through it. Something was out there. Primally, I step back from the plate glass, and even now, most of a second later, the hedge flutters with the waning last signs of its disturbance, as if it is shivering. I work the latch upright and pull the door aside. It's loud enough to wake Kristen, but I do not think it will wake Kristen, and I do not think anything else either. Because tonight, spirits and hidden frustration have laid her mind in a grave so deep that no noise from this world could breach the packed soil and reach her. The symphony of cicadas returns to full, deafening volume, and the door is still sliding open, but it is lost in their chorus, as is the soft scraping of my footsteps on the patio brick, and the rushed cadences of my heart sounding alarm bells in my chest. I can't hear it, but I can feel dried weeds flaking to crumbs under my feet the closer I get to the hedge. I walk slowly and cautiously. I don't know how long it takes me to get to the hedge, but I know that I take my time and stop at the table to nearly turn back. This is stupid. I could be hearing nothing more than June bugs flying stupidly against the window, tapping the glass with their mindless skulls that they keep on the outside of their fucking heads and simply flying away. Whether or not this is what I think, I reach the hedge. But for a very long time, I only stand and listen. Cicadas. My hand forms a blade again, and I slip it into the knotted billow of twigs and spines that make up its branches and tear it apart, slowly and surgically, when the splash shakes my arm away. I take several full steps back, giving the anonymous author of this splash a wide berth, and I'm forgetting to breathe. Swiftly, I cross back to the hedge and tear at it again, less careful this time. And beyond it to the pond is a swirling black void that would sooner swallow the moonless night sky than betray what ripples still might be racing across its surface. I pull more, and as I do, I can see the full shape of the shore, stretching left and right into the darkness, and at night, this pond does feel like a lake. It feels endless and impossibly deep, as if the stars glinting on its veneer were closer to getting wet than the silt of its deepest trenches were to turning to dust. That thing happens, like when you stare into the campfire or a babbling brook and all the interconnected parts of your brain lose their fingers from one another, leaving you driftless. That thing happens. The pulsing whir of the cicadas dissolves to background static, faint and lulling, and then it is gone entirely. My hypnosis deepens until even the gentle lapping of the water on its shore, rolling and breaking, dips below the threshold of my attention. The stillness reveals something, something hard to place, but as I do place it, the trance breaks like a champagne flute on concrete. This is a pond. Ponds don't have tides. This water should be completely still. My breathing becomes a shiver, and as I listen closer, more nervously, I am hearing more than water beating the shore. I am hearing movement. Movement out in the water. Not like something was swimming, but like something was gliding. Gliding through the glossy black of the pond with a horrifying stealth that left very little wake and even less sound. In the wrenching guts of my imagination, I saw a black eel slicing through the water with blood-red, lidless eyes, working overtime. My mind superimposed the thought onto the dark of the water, like it was filling in blanks. But I do not get a chance to truly see that, because now I am hearing more. Gurgles, like steel bolts in a wooden chest sliding and scraping against each other, rose to a rasp out in the veil of the night. My eyes bloomed and the hairs on the back of my chest stood with such aggression that it felt they would tear themselves from my flesh and fall to the ground, ripped tissue still clinging to their roots. The rasp became a note, and the note gurgled again, like it was clawing its way up whatever terrible throat was freeing it, grasping for purchase against a bloodied esophagus, and finally spilling forth in a wash of phlegm and very audible agony. The note drifted as it labored on with the sounds of vocal cords that were not muscles, but were in fact rusted chains, and it began to search, to try. It reached upwards and fell again before it twisted and folded itself into what was clearly, indistinguishably, unarguably, a vowel. The voice had attempted, before trailing off as if it had run out of breath. My jaw snaps open as I leapt back, and I am sure a yelp, some cry of panic, will escape, but I am silent, and not by choice. I cannot yet scream. The voice, if it is a voice, tries again. Becoming clearer now, less labored, and to my horror, somewhat human. It is quicker now, louder, and much more human. I don't like this, and I want to turn and run inside and wake Kristen and pull her in the car and leave, but the voice drags on. My shivers turn to tremors, and the voice is changing. What at first seems to belong to the sandpapered timber of an old man is getting younger, smoother. It is improvising. The gurgling rasp that sends splinters through my bones is barely a fry. And the voice drags on.
Ow. 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 Ow.
I do finally take a step back now, my own morbid curiosity losing its first bit of ground in a battle against my sense of survival. Whatever is out there is starting to, trying to, or even learning to sound human. But I wouldn't gamble a glance, let alone my life, that whatever's out there is human at all.
Ow. Ow.
It prattles on, growing both in volume and what is beginning to sound like excitement. Yes, whatever is out there sounds excited.
Ow. Ow.
It is nearly a shout now. I feel for my cell phone in my pocket, but it is inside by my laptop. And oh, fuck, well, because what good would it have done me? Kristen is dead asleep. And who would I call? The cops? And tell them what? That I was hearing voices? From a pond? The truth is, I don't know what the fuck I would do if I had my phone, but I am very certain I need to go where it is. I need to go inside. I take 2 or 3 more steps back before I feel safe enough to turn around, but even then, I do not. I am almost to the door, almost sure that this has been my imagination and that I really need to turn in for the night when the voice starts again. Quieter now.
How? How?
The H was raspy, clattering. Like its owner could not decipher precisely how to make the sound, but in 2 more passings it had learned.
How? How?
I reached behind me to open the glass door and found that I had not closed it. The ground beneath me was littered with jagged and piercing pebbles that bore into my bare feet, and had I more brain power to allocate to this sensation, I might have suspected that I had stepped on a piece of glass, because the pain of this step surges up into my calf like fire.
How? How?
The voice insisted. No, no. My mind screamed. I profusely overcompensated when I lifted my feet behind me to step into the house, not wanting to trip on the ledge and find myself suddenly prone, unsure of what danger I was actually in. only sure that I was in some amount of danger. Both feet land on soft carpet, one after another, and I keep my eyes on the hedges as I extend my hand to find the sliding door. My fingers wrap around the angled handle. Before I begin to pull it shut, I hear the voice once more, crisp and clean.
Help.
The word is spoken, not asked, and the P is a confused plosive that spits water, as if the mouth of this creature dipped too low into the pool of obsidian it waded in and spat as it croaked its haunting plea.
Hello?
I cry out, before I can think not to, but it's too late. I want to shut the door now, more than I've ever wanted anything, but every fiber of me is begging and praying that this can all be explained, and so I step back out into the patio, like an idiot. The rocks press into my surely bleeding feet, and I reach them behind me, and I scrape them against the lip of the doorway to clear them from the pits they have dug into me. They rock with pain again, and one is stuck, drilled into my foot. I aim to dig it out, but I am moving again. There is still no response yet. I am to the table, and here I stop.
Hello? Is someone out there?
My words have very little to echo off of aside from the house behind me, and so my cry feels sterile, like I am on the moon, or at the very least, very utterly alone. But I am not alone. I take one more step, arriving at the hedge, and I want to ask again because I want this to be explainable. I want this to be a case of me getting worked up over nothing, or someone actually needing help, or a prank. Oh God, I would be so happy if this were nothing but a prank, but that ship sails, and hope topples. Because when I hear the voice again, it is my own voice coming from not my body, and it is, right now, talking to me.
Hello?
Not me saying. The word is even barely accented, foreign on the tongue of its speaker, and before that alone is time enough to break my resolve, I can hear the sound of water falling and breaking, as whatever is just beyond the hedge, whatever is no more than 3 or 4 feet away from me, begins to stand up out of the water.
Hello?
It offers again, but I am already running towards the door. More rocks dig into my feet and are carried with me into the house where I pull the sliding door closed like there is a bear on the other side. I no more than have it locked. A bead of sweat breaks rank on my brow and slides down my nose, when the sharp and sudden tink of something hitting the plate glass causes my heart to shudder and spark painfully out of time. 2 more projectiles collide against the door, and my mind goes to the pebbles on the patio. I double-check the lock, twisting the latch to the point of aching, trying to lock it harder, lock it more. There is another tink followed by 2 more in quick succession, and when I look past the glass boundary in front of me, the hedge is morphing, stretching around something that is pushing its way through. Scrambling and nearly falling, I rush for the front door and find it is not locked either. How am I so fucking stupid? But I lock it, and thank God that this door is a deadbolt I can use. The latch on the sliding glass suddenly seems like a joke, and I wish it were 3-inch thick steel. I wish there was no door there at all. The door in the living room is alight, and I want to run straight upstairs, but I have to get my phone. I have to call the police. It's right there by my computer. Maybe 10 steps there and back, but the tinks are getting louder and closer. The urge to yell and wake Kristen's services, but I am too afraid to make a sound, to announce myself. My breath is a full shudder now, quaking and creaking in and out of my lungs in short blasts, when I decide to turn the corner and make a run for it. I turn my head around the corner first, waiting for a lulling in whatever is throwing rocks at my door like I was waiting for an enemy to reload. I could see my phone sitting next to my laptop, but it might as well be a mile away, because I can also see, out in the shadowy yard beyond, where something was crawling. No, not crawling, but dragging itself across the bricks with its legs. Are those legs? Dragging lifelessly behind it. Its arms. Are those arms? Were locked upright, or perhaps didn't have elbows to bend at all, or perhaps it had dozens of elbows, and they were all locked in a dogged and hellish drive to drag itself right to my door, and right to me. As it got closer, I could see the water shimmering on its sickly gray skin. What other features it might have had were obscured in the darkness. There was no moon, but I swore I could make out the texture of hair or very coarse fur, or perhaps even scales. The blackness of the yard made it appear to be slick with crude oil that dripped viscous and slow from its body in long black trails across the patio. With a surprising balance, it bent one arm, or rather, coiled it, up to its mouth, and withdrew something that it swung with a full wind at the window. I jumped as it made contact with the glass and washed with cold blood as it reached back into its mouth and crooked its neck to again pry something from its maw. It swung its arm in a windmill fashion again, and the object that struck the window cracked against the glass, fell, and bounced lightly on the brick below. I followed it with unblinking eyes as it dropped and rolled a few inches in a circular pattern, but I couldn't make it out, or didn't want to make out what I was seeing. It looked long and conical, tapering to a needle's point at one end, and all at once the wounds of the soles of my feet sent a dizzying signal of pain and realization that finally allowed me to look away. I slid back around the corner, holding my body tight against the wall, lifted one foot, and picked at the rocks embedded in my heels. They sang in agony as my fingers studied for them, and when I found the first one, seeping blood as I had suspected, it was a live wire. My nerves sang, but I pinched the tips of my fingers around one that was sunk deep into the muscle, and it pulled out in a long, smooth track. Shaking from the pain, I brought the object closer to my face to inspect it in the ambient light from my laptop from the room next door. It did not look or feel like a rock. It was maybe half an inch long, polished, smooth, jagged at one end, and terrifyingly sharp at the other. I pricked my finger at its point to test the edge when the dawning fear that this was not a rock took hold. This was not a rock at all. This was a tooth. This was a fang. Whatever that thing was out there, it was ripping its own needly fangs from its skull and throwing them at the door. Fuck my phone. I darted up the stairs, but halfway up my path, the blood from my foot denied me traction on the hardwood steps, and I slipped and tumbled down hard. My head racked against the post holding the handrail and landed with a concussive thud against the linoleum entryway floor. The fang on the ground bounced and rattled beside me as I dropped, and when I opened my eyes, I could hear scraping on the glass door, like teeth on a chalkboard. I looked upstairs, expecting to see the bedroom light flick on, but Kristen remains miraculously asleep, so I shout, "Kristen! Kristen! Kristen! Kristen, wake up!" Outside, the creature screams in my own muffled voice. Kristen, wake the fuck up! My voice breaks to a squeak on fuck, and it rips at my throat. Outside, the creature moans.
Kristen, wake!
The door rattles. The lock holds, but the not me scrapes at the door with squealing nails, and I begin to cry. I try to stand, but my head is wheeling, and my leg suddenly blazes with pain, and I cannot move it.
Kristen!
I'm sobbing, and the door rattles with violent bangs now. The lock clutches at its latch with increasing strain, the metallic hammering of its catch pinging and cracking over and over.
Kristen! Kristen! Wake!
The not me wails.
I pull my body the rest of the way down the stairs on my elbows, my knees exploding in pain that lightnings all the way up my leg every time my foot falls to the next step, and I mull with every movement. When I'm finally down, sweating profusely now, I spin around as carefully but as quickly as I can and begin to try to pull myself up the stairs backwards. Kristen had her cell phone up there, as if I can get up there. If I can just make it up there and bang on the door and hopefully wake her comatose ass up, then we both might just live to see another fucking day. With my one good leg, I push against the wall and try to reach up the handrail, but my world is spinning around me and my eyes can't focus on anything for more than a few seconds before my stomach turns and I have to squeeze them shut again to keep from retching.
Kristen! Kristen!
The not me exclaims again with growing excitement as I opt to roll over on my stomach and climb up the stairs.
Kristen! Kristen! Wake! Kristen, wake!
I reach my hand up as many steps as I can and pull on the lip of the board with as much grip as I could, but my hand slips in my own fucking blood from my own fucking foot. I wince as I absentmindedly attempt to wipe the blood from my hand on the paint of my bad leg and swiftly adjust to cleaning my hand on my shirt sleeve. Outside, the monster moans and slams at the glass in shrieking fits. Its voice is gravel and smoking again, churning and changing beneath a thick film of clotted mucus and filth. I push against the door with my good leg again and reach for the step. My fingers find enough purchase to hold on, but as soon as I try to give it even a fraction of my weight, it slips free again, and my leg screams, burns, electrifies. It's too fucking slick. Not me's voice is lifting high into a pitching scream, almost a lady's scream, and I'm shaking as I pull my shirt sleeve up again to try and clean my hands of it. Shaking from pain, shaking from fear, and shaking from knowing that I could be about to die. However, when I look over at the sleeve with my hazing, darkening vision, everything suddenly stands still. My shirt sleeve is not clean, but it's not smeared with blood either. And the step may have blood on it, but more than anything, I realize that what my hand is slipping in is not blood, but water. Pond water. I sink. The door rattles and either shatters or the latch breaks or both, but by the time I pull it all together, the front door was not locked. It was never locked. I was outside for so long because I heard the splash of the creature getting back in the water. The front door was unlocked, and Kristen may be a deep sleeper, but she is not asleep, and there is no moon. In the living room, I heard a sound like a wet Velcro ripping apart, and two long, bloody fangs crack against the back wall to my left. I let myself slide all the way to the floor again and weep. The carpet squishes and cowls as the creature drags its sopping legs, and before it rounds the corner, it utters one perfect impression of Kristen as it says in a dull, even mimic.
Help.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.